You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
The new Cleveland Browns draft picks are in. See them in action at the newly renovated First Energy Stadium at the best prices by securing your Cleveland Browns season tickets today. Visit ClevelandBrowns.com or call 440-824-3434 today. Vic Carucci with Michael Regei, who's filling in for Nathan Zagura on this Football Wednesday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. So happy that you're hanging out with us. And 216-578-0850 is how you engage, how you get aboard with us. And we do have someone who is doing that right now. He is the Bostonian. Hello, Bostonian.
How you guys doing?
Doing great, man. What's up?
All right, I'm going to have to correct you about the most polarizing figure in sports. Do you remember Doug Flutie?
I do. Well,
do you remember how he bootlegged with the ball and he drop-kicked the ball over the goalpost? And every one of his games in the senior year was on national TV. Do you recall that?
This is a great – no, you're dead on.
All right.
I love
polarizing. You also
he
know
was
that
polarizing,
he went,
yes.
He went to the USFL.
Yep. He went to the Canadian Football League.
Well, he did, but let me finish.
Okay.
He was 5 years most valuable player in the Canadian League. Nobody ever done that, not even Warren Moon that was there. Okay? Then he went to the USFL. The Browns wanted him when he came out of college, but Donald Trump offered him a ton of money to come to USFL. Okay?
And then Donald got Jim Kelly, and Doug became kind of like the secondary guy there. Let's point that out too.
Wait, but that's when he went to when he went to the other team.
No, this is with the New Jersey Generals. That's when
Doug Flutie started there with the running back Herschel Walker.
Herschel Walker, yes,
right.
I'm saying that's
okay.
When Kelly came in.
And then he went to Canadian League. He was there 5 years. He won the most valuable player 5 years.
Yes.
And then he went to the National Football League. He went to the Minnesota Vikings. You recall that?
He went to the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes.
Yeah. He was with
He didn't go to the Vikings. He went to the Bears.
If you're going to be a Doug Flutie authority, let's
all
get right, the right
okay,
teams
he went
now.
To the Bears, and he beat out Jim Harbaugh and Tom Zach for the starting quarterback job there
with Ditka.
Right, with Ditka, and then he left there and he went to the San Diego, right?
He went.
Yes.
No. Bostonian.
Or he went to the Patriots.
Bostonian.
He went to the Patriots.
Bostonian. Stop.
Vic's going
to
line it up.
He went to the. I got to stop you because all you're doing is his biography. Buffalo Bills, and I knew him well there. I covered him there, and then San Diego, and then finally New England and the dropkick thing. And he was, you know, that was his second stint with the Patriots. It's Bears, Patriots in the NFL, New Jersey Generals. You got all that. All right. All your points are polarized. Yes, he was polarizing.
Yeah, he was.
I'll tell you when he was the most polarizing. When he got to Buffalo and the Bills turned around and they were, you know, when he came back, I mean, I thought this was going to be a real circus sideshow. When they put him in there, he infused life and spark into this offense. I mean, it would be sort of like the ideal almost script that you'd want to see from, say, a Johnny Manziel, a running quarterback, an unconventional, smaller guy, all this stuff. And what it was is they had this classic drop, but they got Doug Flutie, and then they had this classic drop back guy named Rob Johnson that they picked up for a trade for a first-round pick from Jacksonville, who had barely played behind Mark Brunell in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. They bring him in to Buffalo, and all of a sudden, you know, now it's Rob Johnson's show, and then Doug comes in and changes everybody's opinion and gets everybody fired up, and the Bills needed that infusion of spark and talent. But he was polarizing because there was the faction that said, let the unconventional runaround guy do his thing and enjoy the fun of it. And then the others who said he's going to get killed doing that. It has a limited shelf life. You want the more conventional. And then there was a very, very ugly quarterback controversy between Flutie and Johnson who were backbiting each other and divided the entire football team. It got ugly in Buffalo.
They were not friendly
by
any stretch. Yeah, and you were there and you know. And Vic... Also, I think we tend to forget, though, while he may have been polarizing, while our image and our visions are of that, you know, he's outside the pocket and on rollouts and on waggles, Doug Flutie could throw and make plays from the pocket, yes?
He could.
He had an awkward
sidearm kind of wind-up delivery, but he did. Yes, he made some plays from the pocket.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's still, regardless, you have to. You have to. I think we all could agree on that. And if that doesn't, again, I'm not trying to say it's got to be 100%, but you're going to have to show whoever you are as an NFL quarterback, can you make throws and throws that are successful from the pocket? You got to do it.
No, you ultimately have to do it, and the other part of this can work. I agree that you have to have some other answers to to those various problems that defenses are going to give you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think players of that ilk or that style can. But the long history of this league doesn't favor that many players of the smaller size and such succeeding in the NFL. History isn't kind. History makes the strongest argument that this won't work, that he's going to overcome odds, has to succeed, because you're just going by long-term history. And I'll have the others who will tell me, yeah, it's a changing game, it's a different game. I don't know. Last I checked, I think I see bigger, stronger, faster defenders on mm-hmm. the field. And if anything, when this thing worked for the less conventional guys, it worked a longer time ago for the Doug Flutie's that we talk about.
Yeah.
It worked at a time, Fran Tarkenton.
Yeah.
It worked at a time when defensive athletes and defenses in general weren't what they are now.
No, and that's something that I think that we probably aren't giving a lot of credence to. But, again, this is when we go back, Vic, if we're going back even 10 years, but now we're talking about going back 20 to 30 years, and how defenses were, the philosophy of them against quarterbacks of that, you can't compare them. It's just way, way too different to compare. So, again, this is where Kyle Shanahan and Dow Logans are going to come in, but it's going to make for interesting conversation. There's no doubt about that, because Shanahan has been successful in both Houston and in Washington with different styled quarterbacks that he's fit into his system.
But he hasn't had a guy like this.
No, not like this.
As much as RG3 did the running thing, these are different guys. And RG3 still, isn't the biggest, thickest, largest athlete, he's still, from a height standpoint, mm-hmm. got more going for him than Johnny Manziel does. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a big difference there. Jason Gibbs, our producer, you said you had a tweet or two that fell into – oh, you know what? Before we get to those – this is Brady Quinn, the former Browns quarterback, during this interview that he conducted recently, questioning or wondering out loud what Jimmy Haslam, the Browns owner, thinks about what Johnny's doing off the field.
I mean, if you're asking Jimmy Haslam, is that really what you want the face of your franchise doing and having out there? I just don't think it's right. I don't think it's respectful to the other veteran players, too.
Well, here's where I think that is on the money. My understanding is that from an organizational standpoint, from the Ray Farmer, Mike Pettine end, the talk is either coming or has already been had between them and Johnny. That this is now the time to say, okay, enough's enough, and we're heading into the stretch now where he's still doing some things around town. The rookie symposium's coming up, so he's got some obligations around here along with the other rookies. But there will come that period where just left to his own devices, where it isn't just, quote, the weekend thing as a respite from football to do as he pleases, which he can do, but being mindful of what gets out there. And I don't think it's that hard for him to do. I don't think this is about ambush cameras on him, being in those situations. And if there's any, even the slightest doubt that what you may be doing puts you in that spotlight, puts you in that place where those cameras might be on you, and this happens after you get the talk from the men in charge here, shame on you. Then you're just basically saying, I don't care. I'm going to defy. And honestly, I think that would be the biggest knucklehead move of all. It's already in the knucklehead neighborhood, but it would be bigger because now, the people who invested in you.
Yeah.
I mean, Ray Farmer, Mike Pettine.
Right.
You owe them now. You owe them.
Sure
you
do.
You owe them performance. You owe them that first and
just signed your contract
else.
And there's
and you signed your deal and all that. Okay. But you're now, you make them, quote, look better or look good by not doing the thing that people maybe wondered about whether your focus was truly what it should be on.
And don't raise that question. Right. Don't allow people to raise that question. Johnny's a bright young guy, and I think he realizes the reasons that he got here and what still is most optimum that's going to keep him here and allow him to reach all of the goals that he set for himself, both with the Cleveland Browns and individually. And, Vic, correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say, to my best recollection, when he started working out after the college season ended and then up to the combine in February that you were at, and then with almost a good 2 full months on into 3 months after that until early May when the Browns drafted him in the first round. Johnny had kind of shut it all off.
Yes.
You think about that now.
Yes.
Going back to January before the combine, we weren't hearing anything about Johnny in a hanging out with his buddies, partying since, or being the object of TMZ and social media. So what I'm saying is, look, Johnny knows that at least he and his agents and his family thought it best possibly to, all right, let's shut it all down. Let's go work hard and get ready for the draft, right? And that's what they did. So you wouldn't think it would be that difficult if indeed, as you just said, maybe there's been conversation within, you know, this building. It wouldn't be that difficult for Johnny to just revert back to that. Approach it the same way you did leading up to the draft.
Well, because why were you doing it then? Because you wanted to optimize your chances of being picked.
You wanted to be in the best light possible, right?
So the cash-in, the trade-in was he got the 22nd overall pick. Okay, that's done. Now maybe his thought was, I did my part. Well, guess what? Go back to it again. You're right. It's a good plan.
Yeah.
All right. We will have much more. We'll hear from you. We got your tweets. It's hashtag mailbag Wednesday because it is a mailbag Wednesday. So hashtag mailbag on your tweets to @Browns_daily or to me @VicCarucci or @Michael Regai on the Twitter accounts. Do it that way. Call us too, 216-578-0850. Love to hear from you. Vic and Michael, stick around. ESPN 850 WKNR.